Good morning, Nashville! We have a special episode for you today. Episode number 25 of About Nashville. I am Mike Rogers. Today we have the famous Steve-O, the comedian, the Jackass star, the guy is cool as everything. I went to his show last night and saw it at Zany's, and it was amazing. I got a fantastic interview. We had a fantastic talk. You got to go see it, guys. He is hilarious. He is absolutely hilarious. And he didn't catch himself on fire. He didn't blow himself up. He was just funny. He was just funny. He sat there and told great jokes, great stories, and it was highly, highly entertaining. If you get the chance while you are in or around Nashville right now, make yourself stop, go and get tickets. Let me tell you what, the guy signed. He sat there in line for over an hour and signed every single autograph in the entire place. Took a picture with every single person that was there at his comedy show. So he will be performing again tonight at 7 o'clock. He'll have a 7 o'clock show, and he'll have a 9:30 show. The tickets are $25. He is also performing Saturday. He will have a 7 o'clock show and a 9:30 show on Saturday, July 30th. The tickets are also $25. And on Sunday, he will have one show only, July 31st at 7:30 p.m. for $22. Be sure to go to Zany's and to check out this show. And if you don't know exactly where Zany's is at, they're at 2025 8th Avenue South, Nashville, Tennessee, 37204, where you can see all things Zany's, all things funny. What can I say? What more can I say about this interview? I can tell you this, and the guy was straight up real with me. When I wasn't sure, honestly, what I was going to get with the interview. I didn't know if he was going to be performing the entire time that we talked. I didn't know if he was going to be running bits on me. I didn't know if he was going to share with me who he really was, or if he was going to be in the mood to... I didn't know. I didn't really know what I was going to get into. But then when we just started talking, the guy is as real as it comes. You know, and he's honest. He's brutally honest about a lot of things, about his life, about his situations, about his, you know, why he does comedy and why he became Steve-O, why he seeks attention in the way that he does. I tell you what, it was a very enlightening interview, to say the least, and one I'm very proud of. Crazy. I know this is not Tuesday. It's Friday morning, but I was excited. I wanted to get this out there to you. Fasten your seatbelts, guys, and you know the words. Let's do this thing!
I'm a knockout fighter with a kick-ass band. That's why they call me the Honky Tonk Hitman. A knockout fighter with a kick-ass band. That's why they call me the Honky Tonk Hitman. Yeah.
Welcome to About Nashville with your host, the Honky Tonk Hitman, Mike Rogers.
It's time for me to throw down some more skilled stuff, man. Speaking of skilled stuff, dude.
Skills, yeah. Circus skills.
I am freaking out over your you have got cat-like freaking coordination. What the fuck? Where did that come from? I mean, literally, like, have you been like that since you were like 3?
Thanks for the kind words. I always love a good compliment. I don't know that I'm that coordinated. I just think that I'm just such like a diehard through and through attention whore that what came naturally wasn't the coordination, but the inclination to really like practice different like skills and stuff, like to seek the attention that I crave so desperately.
Oh, well.
So that's really what it is not that I'm naturally talented, but just that I'm just so needy for attention that I just put in the work.
Have you always been that way?
Yeah, man, for sure, dude. Like, whatever, like, neglect issues, came from having, like, successful alcoholic parents. Whatever it is. There's something going on there, but...
So your dad, he was Coca-Cola or Pepsi?
Pepsi-Cola, yeah.
Pepsi-Cola?
And worked for Pepsi-Cola, R.J. Reynolds Tobacco, Nabisco, Campbell Soup, Del Monte, Canned Foods or whatever, Canned Fruits. What else did he work for? Campbell Soup, I said... Whatever. It was just, I guess, Procter & Gamble is where he started out. I don't know. He worked for a lot of different American multinational corporations, and he headed up their international divisions, which was why I grew up in 5 different countries. I was born in England, moved to Brazil, spoke my first words there. I was 2 years old, moved to Venezuela. I spoke Spanish in nursery school there. And then I moved to Connecticut when I was 4, and I did kindergarten there. And then first grade, moved to Miami. Then when I was like 9 years old, I moved to London, England. And then when I was 12 years old, I moved to Toronto. I lived in Canada. And I was still 13. I moved back to London, England. And I was there for all 4 years of high school.
How many languages do you speak?
I spoke 3 languages by the age of 3, but I forgot 2 completely by the age of 5. Which on one hand kind of makes me feel like an idiot.
But and you learned English again when?
I learned English when I was 4. I don't know. Maybe my parents probably had me speaking some kind of English like before that. I feel like mildly resentful. Maybe a little more than mildly. I feel resentful towards my parents for not keeping me speaking. It's great when, you know. Mm. I mean, sure, let Portuguese go. Who gives a fuck about Portuguese? But Spanish is like some useful shit, man. Uh-huh. Like they could have made it fun in the household. They could have been like, hey, you know, let's keep Stever's Spanish going, you know, like, and they didn't. And so now I'm gonna be like, yeah, I learned all these languages when I was a kid, and I forgot 2 of them. And it does fucking make me feel like an idiot. But at the same time, I know that for toddlers, for children to learn multiple languages, you know, at a very young age, of course, it's easier to learn languages at that young age. But also, apparently, and I believe this to be true, becoming bilingual or multilingual, it develops more of your brain. So you could definitely, even if you forget the languages like I did, from what I understand, you access more parts of your brain, like more of your brain. So you're somehow more capable of a human being.
Let me ask you this. So you, were you just being facetious when you said both your parents were alcoholics?
Not both. Dad was a problem drinker. Mom was a chronic, as serious as, as it gets. Like, mom's whole side of the family was so fucking bad.
Okay.
Like everybody, again, I'm not really exaggerating, I don't think. Maybe like I've got a, I don't know, maybe there's a couple cousins that aren't like really dying, but pretty much like everybody on my mom's side of the family is like already dead or like actively dying of alcoholism. It's like generally, like, maybe I'll allow for a couple exceptions, but that's pretty much like every leaf on the tree.
Okay, so I quit drink. Are you, so how long have you been sober?
8 years.
Okay, so I quit drinking 8 months ago, and not because I had a problem or anything like that. That's the first question I always get. So you have a problem? I'm like, fuck no, I just quit. I'm like, I just decided to quit. But have you noticed that people, like, now that you don't drink or do things, like, they want to try to entice you to do it more?
Not really, man. And that's kind of a function of who you surround yourself with. I mean, I take my sobriety like super seriously. And for the first 2 years, I was either in a psych ward, a rehab, or a halfway house. I stayed, you know, living in a sober living, like halfway house, until I had 2 full years of sobriety. And I'm really grateful that I did that, because that gave me like all kinds of structure and support and discipline that I otherwise wouldn't have had.
You remind me of, and I'm going to explain this whenever I, because you're going to be like, what the fuck are you talking about? You kind of remind me of Evel Knievel when you move around.
Oh, yeah? I'll take that, man. Sounds good.
Well, because...
Because my shit's so broken.
Yeah, I was trying to say that as politely as possible. You have these cat-like, this coordination of a cat, but yet you can tell that you've been banged up a bunch.
Yeah, like, you know, I was just saying, it might have been this morning. It might have been this morning. It might have been, like, in the last couple of days. I'm not sure. But I really, like, made the note you know, my stock answer, my quick, like, sort of, you know, impulse is, like, to say, when people ask me, do I have permanent damage, to tell people that I'm in shockingly good condition, given everything I've been through. And just, like... Maybe this morning, I was like, you know, I might stop saying that because it can be catching up to me a little bit. Of course, I'm a little bit banged up at this point because I got this crazy idea to build porta potties made out of wood and sit on the roof of them while a car crashes through them, which I did. And I found it to be too easy. It was kind of anticlimactic. So I was like, okay, well, what am I actually going to do now? I'm going to stand on a skateboard on top of a wooden outhouse and then have the car crash through it. Like 35 miles an hour is actually fast as fuck. Like,
yeah, something, right. You
know? So 35 miles an hour, the car crashes through it. And so then it knocks it out from underneath me. And then I'm standing on the skateboard. And my job is to fall all the way to the ground and land on the board properly. But the board got away from me. And so I fucked up my ankle and I banged up my hip and my shoulder. I actually don't know how I got so injured just from those two falls.
You are a cat.
But
you're a cat. You got 9 lives.
Maybe a little bit, but now I'm like, I got to go back out. I got to go back out and build more porta potties and do it so that it works correctly.
God, God. So you're not going to give it up. You're like,
I got to do it. I just have to do it, man. I really got to. And I'm excited about it too. I'm like super, super excited about the prospect of landing. But now what that means that I have to do is really crouch down while I'm on top of the porta potty. I got to crouch down. I got to grab that board because it's going to get away from me if I don't. And I have to hold on to it with my hand. So then and be holding it when the car blows out the porta potty and just kind of hold on to it, tuck it, kind of tweak it out like a skateboarder does in the air, kind of style it out a little bit and then plop it down and land on it. But the thing is that preparing for that, like I've kind of set my board up on various things and set it up and kind of like get into that motion of like what it's going to be like and kind of trying to practice and prepare for it. And what I'm finding from the exercise of just crouching down to grab the board, that like, wow, my body feels like a piece of garbage. I should just get into yoga, right? Like, isn't that the ticket? I mean, people say such good things about yoga.
I don't know. I
gotta do something. I need to do something because I've got like precisely like 1 month minus 1 day, whatever it is. It's August 27th, unless we do it on the 28th, Saturday or Sunday.
What are you counting down?
That's the day when we've got the facility, like where I'm not on the road doing comedy dates, it's got to be on a weekday because the facility that's letting us crash cars on their property has neighbors. They have neighbors there that are business days.
Okay, you
know? And so they want me to do it on the weekend.
Holy shit!
It's pretty cool. I've got the legend Danny Way driving the car. He's a legendary skateboarder who jumped over the Great Wall of China on a skateboard. He jumped out of a out of a helicopter. Like, he's just done a million things. He's in the Guinness Book of World Record for not only the highest air ever done and landed on a skateboard, but also the longest air, which he did consecutively. He did the longest air that has ever been done on a skateboard, and it just happened to be a backside 360. He did a 360 degree revolution, 75 feet long, which is longer than anybody's ever landed a skateboard jump. When he landed that 75 foot long backside 360 air, he rolled directly into the highest air that has ever been done. He did them back to back without setting foot off the skateboard, and the highest air was 23 and a half feet above the top of the ramp, even though he just broke his own record like in the last year and did a significantly higher air.
Damn.
Yeah, so Danny Way, and it's so significant too because we're both the same age. We're both 42. Uh-huh. He became a professional skateboarder when he was 14. And when we were both 15, like, you know, I was riding a Danny Way pro model skateboard.
Oh,
you know,
God.
And now we're buddies, and he's like, you know, like we're doing all this crazy stuff together, and it's really cool.
So are you as, obviously, I know I'm fixing to ask a rhetorical question because I already think I already know the answer. So I'm taking it that you're probably semi-pro skateboarder.
No, not at all. I definitely grew up on a skateboard. I lacked the natural talent to pursue a career as a professional skateboarder, which is sort of a real blessing because skateboarding brought me to the video camera, and being the attention whore that I am, I fell in love with the video camera, but I just wasn't good enough. And if I did try to pursue a career as a skateboarder, I would have been a needle in a haystack and I wouldn't have stuck out. And
I think you would have stuck out. You'd have stuck out at anything you did, man.
Yeah, perhaps. And I'll take that as a compliment too, gratefully. So the skateboard brought me to the video camera and I just clutched onto it and there you have it, man. I just found other stuff to do.
Do you ever play any instruments growing up?
Nah, man.
No musical talent?
My dad was just super homophobic and that wasn't gonna happen.
So he's
what's
he's
that? A flesh flute.
Oh gosh. While
we have a quick lull right there, I want to point out to everybody that I am in Nashville. I am performing at Zany's tonight, which is Friday. Two shows tomorrow night, which is Saturday. And
today's Thursday.
Right,
you're going to be here. Fuck, I don't know. It's like Back to the Future shit. Yeah, yes,
I'm so hyper aware of like how. Life things. I'm not even like really engaged in my own personal experience of life. I'm so hyper focused on how on the reception of it.
And sure. Sure. Okay.
Like,
so
for us, it's Thursday.
Right.
I have crawled into the head of the people I feel are listening to this, and I'm just like, this is how I live. It's a depressing ass existence, man. When you're so fucking hyper concerned with like the. You know, the approval, the validation, this external fucking, you know,
I get
like, it's so about like everybody else and what they think of me. I'm so overly concerned with the opinions of others.
Sure. Do you have anxiety?
I'm essentially doomed to a miserable existence. Fuck. Because like your happiness has to come from within.
Right.
And like, it's just not fucking healthy to be so obsessed with everybody else and their opinions and their thoughts. You know,
Maybe that's where I have so much anxiety myself, but you don't appear to be the way. I'm anxious. I've got
some healthy anxiety. I had a therapist that really like pressured me into getting on this fucking Zoloft shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I can't even really say that I felt like any different. But I stopped fucking taking them. I'm so glad that I'm free of
make you feel numb.
Psych meds.
Numb, yeah.
I never felt numb, but it's just, I don't know, it's just whack.
Yeah.
I think that we could have a whole conversation about the prescription, pharmaceutical drug industry.
Do you have ADHD?
What the fuck is ADHD? ADHD, bipolar, fucking anxiety. Like, these are all fucking such, like, subjective, fucking non-clinical terms, you know? Like, it's just stupid, man. I just feel like that it's just stupid fucking hype to sell drugs, man.
With your
court... You know, and what it all points to is a lack of faith, man, you know? It all points to a lack of a fucking connection with a power greater than ourselves.
Okay.
Which I confess to
having. Okay. That's where I was heading with this. So you're a religious man?
I'm not religious at all. I mean, like, it's kind of a stock, like, kind of bullshit thing to say. Like, oh, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. So rather than just jump on that bandwagon of schmucks who say, I'm not religious, but I'm a spiritual person, I'd rather, like, qualify it by saying that I'm not not particularly spiritual. I recognize the importance of living a life that that isn't shameful, you know, like I recognize I don't want to be like racked with guilt, shame, remorse, regret. Like those are not like feelings that I want to really cultivate and manufacture. Beyond that, am I spiritual? Like I've dabbled in meditation. Like I've gone through phases, been like really good about it and felt that it helped, you know, like lately I've been fucking terrible, you know, even though like I kind of gave it a shot today, which had made me feel a little bit good. I'd like, how spiritual am I beyond that? You know, like, you know, being a sober alcoholic in recovery kind of like a little bit requires a certain level of spirituality, you know, which I would say the definition of being spiritual is to be in the practice of concerning yourself with the needs of others rather than just being 100% selfish and self-centered at all times, which is my given natural nature.
Well, why? Would you say that's all entertainers?
Like, not all entertainers, but certainly like that's a component of alcoholism. You know, like they say that alcoholism is essentially like, you know, a disease that's based on, you know, it's centered in the mind and selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of all of our troubles. So like that's why like recovery.
Damn, that's deep.
Recovery from alcoholism is all about staying sober by helping the next guy get sober. And like, you know, we have our, you know, sort of steps, you know, our 12 steps, and it's all about going through them just for the purpose of taking another man through them.
Did you ever have to cut any of your friends out of your life because of that?
Well, yeah, of course. There's certain people. I mean, you got to look, when you get sober, you got to look at your relationships and you have to determine, on a case-by-case basis, you have to look at your relationships and ask yourself, do I have a legitimate purpose for being in this relationship with this person? Like, does this relationship, revolve around getting loaded? Like, is there a legitimate reason for me to stay, you know, sort of actively in this relationship? And if the answer is no, there's not a legitimate purpose, then yeah, you got to cut that person out. The good news is that when you do get sober and you're serious about it, you find that the people who are negative influences, they just fuck off. You
know? Right.
They just slip away because once you're serious about sobriety, people who only care about getting loaded, like they don't want anything to do with you. Like you are no longer fun. They can no longer get shit out of you. And they really very quickly disappear. There's only one guy who it was important for me and really difficult for me to cut out. And that guy has since gotten sober himself. And I consider him, you know, except for this guy right here, like my best friend in the world. And that guy right there is the fucking international star in his own right, Scott Randolph.
Scott Randolph.
Fucking, yeah. I brought him on the road with me. First trip we went on was to Chattanooga, Tennessee. This was in January of 2014. And I had just gotten out of sex addict rehab. And I called him up and I was like,
wait a minute. You were in sex addict?
I was in sex addict rehab.
That'd be a
yeah.
great place to pick up chicks.
It was only dudes in my thing. But so, and I was like, man, I want to be serious about sexual sobriety because it's important to me to learn how to be in a healthy relationship because I think that future happiness is really dependent on me sort of learning how to stop fucking around and be like a serious guy in a serious and healthy committed relationship. And so it was very important to me to like stop fooling around with girls on the road. And
so you're just like a serial fucker?
More about just trying to get my dick sucked. Because a lot of stress comes with having sex with everybody, you know? Like, I didn't want to, like, to get stressed out over shit. I felt like just getting my dick sucked was the better way to go.
Safer, anyway.
Yeah, for sure. And so it's just so difficult when you're on the road constantly and, like, you know, your job is to go to places where people are congregating to adore you, essentially. I mean, sure. At the risk of sounding kind of douchey and self-important, that's really what happens here, you know, and after every show, I do meet and greet with the crowd. And so now it's like people line up after the show to wait their turn to take a photo with me. And like historically, that was something I considered to be an audition process to determine who the lucky winner who got to suck my dick would be, you know? And so in order for me to continue doing that, like, it was important. And I reached out to Scott Randolph and I was like, hey man, like, can you come with me on a trip to Chattanooga, Tennessee? Like, just fucking cock block for me. So he started as a cock blocker and, you know, like over the last 2.5 years, we've both, like really like pursued our spiritual growth in our programs of recovery, which have addressed not only just substance abuse, but sexual acting out.
Mm-hmm.
And,
so you think they tie together, you think? Possibly.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything that is soothing and provides comfort to people whose natural disposition is to be restless, irritable, and discontent. You know, it's like anything that makes me feel better. And that's food, that's sex, that's, obsession with fame and attention.
Sure.
All that stuff is all dangerous shit. But now, of course, like Scott and I, like no longer are as rigid in our programs of sexual recovery as we have been. So that meet and greet line is ripe with opportunity.
So for my listeners out there, what he's telling you is stand in line. I will have to say this. Stand in line. He's picking. He's picking and choosing. I'm telling you.
I mean, whatever, dude. It's all good. Like, I think... you know, like we can kid around about it, and the reality is, if like a super hot chick comes through the line and she's down, you know, to just hang out and see what happens,
just became an advertisement for dick sucking.
I mean, whatever, but sure, we'll see what happens.
Oh, his face is red. That's gonna play so terribly on the podcast. But
who cares?
I'm telling you, right. That
who
is cares? Hilarious.
Who cares? Because here's the thing, and why I really kind of don't care is just because like. I think the word is jaded. Like, I worked so fucking hard in therapy for so long. I did all this like effort and I got into a relationship and it was just like, and it just, all these other issues just fucking torpedoed it. And then that was the one relationship. And then I tried again and that relationship fell apart. And it was just like, man, like I'm really, disenchanted. I'm just fucking like, I'm bummed, man. And I'm just thinking like, dude, like maybe I'm just not supposed to. So, I mean, I guess like at the moment I classify myself as taking a break from being fucking serious about trying to be in a relationship. And I'm just settling at this point for being a mature, responsible, honest, forthcoming adult. You know, like as long as I'm not lying to people, as long as I'm not harming people, as long as I'm not misleading people, then fuck it, you know? If anybody wants to have a very casual, like, mature and responsible, safe fucking playtime event in my hotel, there is no problem with that whatsoever. Scott Randolph says, go ahead and give him the address. I'll give you the address right now. It's goddamn Zanies. Zanies. And I got two shows at 7 and 9:30. That is tonight, which is Friday.
And tomorrow, Saturday, you're playing through Sunday too, aren't you?
Saturday's all set. That's pretty much sold out already. That's why it was so important to me that you get this out.
Okay.
Like, I mean, Friday's going to look good as well. I mean, but there's space on Friday, you know?
Okay.
Of course, then there's Sunday as well. But like, I really rarely worry about the Sunday ones because, over the course of the weekend doing six shows and doing that photo line where I meet and greet and I send everybody home with the photo, like everybody kind of posts that photo on their social media. And mm-hmm. So it creates an awareness of the fact that I'm in town. And by the time Sunday rolls around, I think like, that awareness has sort of reached a level that, that Sunday just kind of takes care of itself.
I've seen a lot of shows and I got to admit you were like the Garth Brooks of comedians out there.
Yeah,
Garth was world famous for like it didn't matter. There was one time at one of the fanfares that we had here for 24 hours straight. He didn't even go to bed or anything. He just signed autographs in the line. He was like, as long as they're there, he's going to sign them.
Okay.
And I'd never seen, you know, and it was just the most amazing thing in the world. That's why he has such a huge, had such a huge legion of fans. You know, they would say loyal to him because he was so loyal to them. And that's why. And you were like the same thing out there. You're like, I am going to stand out there and sign everything. And and take a picture with everybody.
I think anybody who doesn't do that is just an idiot, because
I've seen people not even come out at all.
Sure. Hey, man, you know, and those people, I don't know. I mean, like, by taking that time and making sure someone has a photo with you and then they can share it, like, all of a sudden they feel like they have a relationship with you, you know, mm-hmm. and, like, you've really, like, taken that, you know, you've established a relationship with them is what you've done. And you've got, like, more, like, someone who's really, like kind of committed to supporting you in your career, man. Like, and especially for a guy like me who's known for, like, silly jackass stunts and been working really hard to establish himself as a comedian. It's so important to do that, you know. It's kind of like grassroots promotion that serves to help me kind of cross that bridge to, like, being established as a comedian. And and like, that's just, it's invaluable. And of course, like, the meet and greet is it's work, you know.
The gravel in your voice, is that from smoking or what is that?
I'm not even sure. I really don't know.
Is that from the swallowing condom? What the hell? What did that?
It could be any number of things, man. Like, I think that just generally shitty living. I think that, like, in the world of vocal coaches or whatever, I think it would be called poor vocal hygiene. I don't even know.
I'm not even sure what the hell that meant. I'm like, so comedy. How did you get into comedy? Because I'm going to tell you another thing is I've interviewed a bunch of comedians, and all of them seem to have a darkness, and it's like you walked out of this darkness and made it light, like a comedian, which is So how did you gravitate toward comedy? Is that
I definitely relate with the darkness thing. There's all kinds of darkness going on with me. I think that, like, everything I described about being an attention whore, there's something like about getting on stage in front of, you know, a large crowd of people, just alone, bearing your soul, talking into a microphone, and basically just, it's just like desperately just begging for that, the validation, the approval, the adoration of the crowd. There's just something about, like, the act of getting on stage to do that that is really indicative of pure self-hatred. You know, there's something about, like,
self-deprecating.
There's something about the act of getting on stage to do stand-up comedy that really indicates a lack of self-esteem, like a feeling of, like, worthlessness on some level. Like, I am not enough. I am not okay. Like, I need to get up. Like, I will only be okay if I get on that stage and the crowd makes me feel okay.
Right, right.
Because in and of myself, I am not good enough.
Well, so that, you know, that's a good point. And when you're up there, you're bearing your soul. You're bearing your heart. You're putting everything right out there. It makes you vulnerable. So have you ever had a bad night where you thought, what the fuck am I doing?
Shit. You know, like you can tell a joke. You can tell a story that one night is like the greatest thing that ever happened, and then turn around and tell it the same way to another crowd and have it and just feel like, wow, like what am I even doing? Like, I question everything about my, you know, it's like, And there it is that when you're at the mercy of external sources for your feelings of self-worth, like you really put yourself in a precarious situation.
Have you ever been to Nashville before? Is this your first time?
This is my third time doing a full weekend at Zany's here in Nashville. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, and about me doing comedy, it's really it's a fortunate thing for me that I have a built-in audience of people who aren't familiar with what I've done and even like aspects of my personal life, because you know, a lot of comedians, you know, you might know their jokes, but people actually like have kind of a sense of who I am and what I've done, and they're interested in it. So I kind of come into it with like a fairly distinct advantage that you know, that I've already connected with the audience before I get on stage.
Sure.
And I'm pretty adept at taking full advantage of my personal experience in life and just utterly shameless and reckless in what I'm willing to admit, And I've got like just a keen sense of what is versus what is not entertaining. So I feel, you know, and I'll stop blowing smoke up my own ass in a moment here. But I really feel like...
it's better than putting a firecracker in it.
I'm pretty good at not wasting people's time, man. And it was really cool. I really appreciated seeing you during the show. I thought, man, here's this guy and he's alone at this table. Like, I wonder, like, did his chick bail on him or like, what, you know? And I was like, I was perplexed because it were like comedians were able to like sort of be in the middle of a bit and kind of like telling jokes, but also thinking like 100 other things at the same time.
Uh-huh.
One of which was, what's this guy's story? This guy is sharp dressed dude wearing a suit, alone at the table. It looks like someone may have been with him and they left or something. But like, but at the same time, what made it interesting to me, like sort of observing you in the front row there, was that it was just evident that you could not have cared less if there was somebody with you at the table, or if they were there, or if they were supposed to be there, or if they had left. You were just having a great time. And like, and I just noticed that in the crowd, man. Like, I noticed when people are sort of emoting joy, and it was great, man. I really appreciate you. Were a great audience member,
dude. Your show did, it brought me a ton of joy, and I've got, I cannot wait for the listeners to hear this. They've got to come to this show here at Zany's. They've got to come see you today and Saturday and Sunday. Whenever they can get in here to see you, they've got to see you, because...
Man, you know, the other thing too, and I know I said that I would do this for like 20 minutes, and I feel like we're like 40 minutes in, which is great, you know? And I was even going to say that at the beginning. I was like, yeah, you know, you've got 20 minutes unless like we have a good time. You know? And the other thing I felt when we started this podcast was like, oh man, great, here it goes. Like, it's just gonna be like sort of like a cookie cutter of like interesting facts about me and my dad and like my sort of childhood and my opinion, and there's nothing really new. But like ultimately, like that really like kind of served as an introduction, and very quickly I think we went into like a bunch of kind of like a conversation and a material that like really hasn't been touched on. And so,
well, I appreciate
it's,
that. Thanks, man.
It's cool that you got like a unique and original conversation out of me, man. And again, I really appreciate how you approached it. You know, like really, you know, a lot of people, like, you know, we were joking around before. I'm like, yeah, the fucking most annoying question on the planet is, will you be on my podcast? Because every fucking dickwad has one. It's every dickwad has one. And it's like, I made myself a rule. I was like, no, I'm not going to be on a podcast unless I've heard of it. I'm not going to do it. But,
well, if you ever have a podcast, I will do it. Oh, you don't even have to ask me.
Hey, I appreciate that a great deal. And also, I'm thankful for the way that you approach it, because you really like had a sense for the timing of when to kind of hit me up for it. Like, and you were just patient and just approached it in a way that made it like made me want to do it.
I'm like the Dexter of podcasts. Like, man, wait, what?
it's been a joy, brother.
I appreciate it. Hey, wait, when we're getting out of here, would you tell my audience, dream big, everybody?
Hey, everybody, I'm Steve-O, and I'm just here to tell you to dream big.